All right, it's that time. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the May Masterclass featuring our beloved and very well-known Mary Bowling. The goddess of all local SEO has a fantastic action-packed tip-based presentation for you today. It covers on-page optimization, what you may be missing. She's going to cover a lot of different strategies. Some of those are going to be local specific. She's going to talk about featured answer and structured data opportunities. She's going to go over some internal linking strategies that can increase page power. I believe she's going to talk about reviews, also best ways to optimize store locators. There's a lot of content to cover. So without any further ado, I will not bore you any longer. I will introduce you to the lady of the hour, Mary. Mary, welcome to the stage today.
Thank you, Casey. You're so sweet to me. You kind of remind me
welcome.
Of my dog. You think a lot more of me than I deserve.
It's all true, all true. So take it away, Mary. Let's go.
All right. So what I'm going to be talking about today are some of the on-page optimization opportunities that I see quite frequently that the people are just missing. They're just not putting their on-page optimization together in a way that helps them as well as it could. And the thing about on-page optimization is it's something that we usually have complete control of on our own websites, and we have a lot of control about it on a lot of other websites. So I do a lot of these local presence audits, and these are the things that I find that a lot of people are missing that are probably going to help you if you can step up your game on. And a lot of it is, you know, people come to you and they say that they're doing everything right, but they're just not hitting their target. And so these are some of the things that I think you should take a look at when you're in a situation like that. And in a lot of ways, websites kind of remind me of the houses in the town where I live. It's a little mountain town in Colorado. And we have a lot of Victorian homes here in the downtown area. What that really means is these houses are 100 or more years old. And although some of them look pretty good on the outside, here's another one, a little tiny one that looks like it's been fixed up real well on the outside, you really don't know what you've got as a foundation for those. Do you have some beautiful game room underneath one of these houses that's, you know, a basement's been dug out and it's been completely restored? Sometimes this is what you have. This is an actual picture of a foundation of my neighbor's. It's a very nice looking house on the outside, but underneath there's some bricks and rocks holding it up, and this could really fail at any time. So this is what you really need to be careful with when somebody comes to you and tells you they have problems, is not just looking at how good the website looks, but looking at the technical foundation. And you really need to check everything and assume nothing. Because a lot of times you're talking to people that they say, oh yeah, my last SEO did that. They took care of that for me. Well, you know, in their eyes, their last SEO might have taken care of it for them, but did they do it right? Did they do it as well as it could be done? Did they use old school tactics that are going to hurt more than harm? So I really think that when you take on a client, you need to take a look at everything that's going on their website. And this is a pretty general checklist that I use. And you will be amazed at how many times you'll find that there's one really glaring thing that might be causing all their problems. For example, they had their site redone and the robots.txt file says disallow on it. It was never taken off. Or the page speed can be so awful that it would never rank for anything. So you really need to take a look at everything before you can prescribe a cure, kind of like a doctor. When somebody comes to you complaining that they just don't feel right, you don't just take a look at one thing and make a diagnosis. You really try to dig in and see what the real problems are so that you can recommend how they fix them. Another thing that gets ignored way more often than it should in local search is NAP plus URL consistency. And with the new newest local search ranking factors survey. In general, the local search community is saying that it's that having your data consistent at the data providers is the fifth most impactful ranking factor. Having your data right at quality and authority sites is the eighth most impactful ranking factor. And having consistency on the tier one, what we consider the tier one websites, is number nine. So, you know, these are three of the top 10 ranking factors revolve around NAP consistency. We've changed our thinking lately and don't believe that you need to change it everywhere, but you should be very religious about checking and ensuring that NAP plus URL is consistent with what's on your website and in your GMB listing in these three areas. So if you need some help understanding this or how to check and fix it, here are some resources that I recommend, and they'll all help you do this cleanup yourself. In the past, I was very reluctant to do cleanup for people because it was such a mind-numbing task. There was so much crap everywhere, but now that you really only need to concentrate on the top providers, I recommend that you either try to do this yourself or that you outsource it to someone who really knows what they're doing. With store locators, if you have more than about 10 locations, you really need to have some kind of formal store locator on your site. And it needs to be prominent on all pages, easy to use. It has to be super crawlable for the search engines. It needs to have a logical hierarchy for the search engines and for humans trying to use it. And one of the key things with store locators is there needs to be a ton of internal linking to page to pass page authority where it needs to go, but also for the humans that are trying to use it. So if they're not exactly where they want to be, there are some links there that can help them get to where they want to be. And you need a separate page for each location, but this needs to be a good page with unique location-specific content. And I would say that none of these is not necessary. Every single thing of one of these things needs to be done on your site to have a good store locator. And if you work for a brand that you've not been able to make this happen, and I know that sometimes there are a lot of restraints working with big brands that you just can't make things happen, please consider using a software as a service solution. This is going to be things like lead pages, Rio SEO pages. Even Yext has store locator software now. So really take a look at these things. And if in many cases, if you have been unable to get a good store locator on your brand website by this time, 2017, you really should consider using one of these software as a service solutions to just get this done. You also want to define entities and relationships on your website. These are just some of the things that we can tell Google about our business on our website, who the people are on the business, what our customers think about us, are the hours we're open, what social media belongs to us, what's our service area. There's a ton of information that we can provide directly to Google about our business. But a lot of people are just kind of patching this in and not doing it in a way that defines all of these entities and relationships for Google. And the way we want to do that is through nested schema. And this is not easy, and there are not a lot of examples out there for people to use right now. In fact, if you know how to do this well, creating some examples to share with people could get you a lot of links. But if you don't know how to do this nested schema, it's probably worth paying someone to either learn how to do it from one of the masters, like David Deering, or to do it for you so that you're defining all the entities and relationships for your business, and Google can see the big picture of your business. You also want to be a star in the SERPs. I mean, when you look at the Google search results, there are stars everywhere for local businesses. We see it in the local finder. We see it in the, we can see it in the local knowledge panel for the business itself, and we can see them in the organic results for a lot of places where people have left reviews for different businesses. But the reason that these places are showing up over here on the right, like TripAdvisor and Yelp and NewYorkMag.com, is because they are using structured schema on those websites to show reviews. Here's some more examples of stars in the SERPs. Usually the your local knowledge panel now can show you reviews from the web right there in your local knowledge panel. Facebook, this particular business distillery, I think this was in Nashville, has a 4.8 out of 5 on Facebook. And Facebook ranks when you search for this business's name, their Facebook page ranks. So this is a really important thing to make sure that you're seeing who's ranking for your business name or for important queries about you, especially if it involves reviews or opinions or ratings, and see who is showing up on the first page that might be able to get you some additional recognition for reviews here on your local knowledge panel, and make sure that you are soliciting reviews there. In this example, this is an Allstate agent's subdomain, and they managed to get stars for just about all of their agents right in the SERPs. They're also showing up on their local knowledge panels and elsewhere, any place where somebody's asking for an Allstate agent. So this is a pretty important thing that you can do this on your own website. And the key to this is really using schema and software as a solution system, software as a service solution. When you combine those two things together is when you can make things like this happen, with your own website showing up on your location pages with reviews. You also want to serve up rich results. And Casey and John did a big presentation on schema and rich results that's completely about that and goes into a lot of detail. But these are the current opportunities that Google is pretty much promoting for local businesses. And some of the things that they want you to do is to mark up your content items. Now, this is special markup that Google gives you. It says, if you want us to show this in our results, give it to us in this form. And this can be some very powerful stuff. This is an example of a place action where somebody can make an appointment directly from a local knowledge panel. To enable these place agent actions, Google may or may not still have this particular form up online. But I've heard from someone who used to work at Google rather recently that brands are probably not going to be able to do this on their own. And the reason for that being that Google's trying to integrate so many different systems for booking and appointments and reservations that they're having a really hard time coordinating it all. So it's probably going to fall to really big brands, somebody like Bank of America, for example, to get their system set up so that it works well with Google's place actions, Or for small businesses, a lot of us are going to have to find someone that we can hook up with, a third-party vendor who gets some preferential treatment on Google and allows these things to show up. And in this particular case, the make an appointment for this hair salon is through mytime.com. So if you're interested in having these place actions, see who's already got the okie-dokie to do this and try and latch on to them so that you can do that on your own site. You can also enhance your site's attributes. So this could be something as simple as these top two examples on the left that show breadcrumbs showing up in the search results to showing what your logo is, what your social media channels are, events that you're having. And the one on the left, the TCL Chinese Theater, they've even gotten their events and details about their events showing up right in their local knowledge panel by enhancing their site's attributes and using the coding that Google wants us to use. This one is still open to everyone, although, depending on what type of business you have, you may or may not qualify for this. But Google has top places that it wants to show, and many of them are showing up in a carousel, like this example on the lower left. I believe the query was Denver's best Chinese or something of that nature. And the top result, the first result from Westword. Westword is a huge, well-known publication in Denver that should own this result, but they don't because they did not mark up their list the way the Eater.com did for their Denver restaurants. So you can express your interest for taking part in this. If you can get good authority and a good list, you might be able to get in this carousel of top places. And when Google talks about this online, they say, help Google present you. And I think that if you think of these rich results in that way, that you're just trying to give information very efficiently to Google that they cannot misunderstand, that they want to show it to searchers when they ask for it. But you're the one that has to make that link to make it very easy for Google to do that. You also want to try to get answer boxes, and this is another thing that John and Casey talked about in their schema and rich snippets course. And this is an example that Keith Say, our mastermind moderator, got. He saw that one of his competitors was getting a answer box, a big nice answer box with a picture for Log Cabin Prices UK. He went in and looked at what they were doing. He tried to do it a little bit better, and then he ended up with the answer box. So this is just something that not too many people are paying attention to right now, and it can give you an advantage if you can get these answer boxes. This is an example. I hadn't seen answer boxes that were very local in the past until about 4 or 5 months ago they started popping up. And in this particular query, Tennessee child custody laws, Miles Mason, a divorce attorney in Memphis, owns that answer box. But if you look at some of these people also ask, there are other small businesses in the Memphis area that also, or in Tennessee, that also provide answers to this question. So there's in many cases more than one opportunity here, and they are shifting to local answer boxes. So that's one thing that I'm definitely looking at for my clients are there answer boxes? If so, how can I steal them from whoever has them? And if there aren't answer boxes, what deserves an answer box and how can I force that? So if that's something you're interested in, you might want to take that course that Casey and John did. Here's another example. This looks like a fairly young lawyer who owns the answer box for DUI in Ohio. So this can be a really big deal if you can make it happen for your business or your clients. And if you're a brand, don't discount the fact that you can help every single one of your locations by getting answer boxes for kind of faddish head terms. In this example, Coit has the answer box for a spot removal guide. They also have a lot of answer boxes around spot removal type questions. So this, you know, people, searchers think that if it ranks well on Google, that it's the best answer. Google thinks that if it ranks well on Google, it's the best answer. So if you can be up there at the top of the page and be the what everyone thinks is the best answer, you're going to get traffic out of this. And it's up to you, once you do get traffic out of it, trying to turn that into sales or engagement. You also want to make sure that you're owning your own brand answers. In this example, the query was repair Patagonia coat. But look who owns the answer for this, a place called ifixit.com. In my opinion, Patagonia should be ashamed of themselves. They actually, their page for repairing coats ranks well. It ranks number one here, but they haven't done it in a way, they haven't answered the question in a way that Google thinks is a good answer for searchers, so Google won't present it to them. But if you were in charge of the Patagonia website, you could easily steal this just because of your brand name recognition and the authority of your site. So be the answer or one of the answers. And with this, you know, just like with the rich snippets, a lot of people are not taking advantage of this now, and it's kind of a golden opportunity. One of the biggest problems I see on sites is that they're not thinking about their site structure. And Gary Iles of Google said on Twitter a few months ago, "Did you know that after 18 years, we're still using PageRank and hundreds of other signals in ranking?" And I know sometimes you mention PageRank to people and they just laugh at you. "Oh, that doesn't matter." Well, it does matter. It's just that we can't exactly tell what it is anymore, and we can't really do much about it as far as PageRank sculpting. There used to be a time back in the day, and I'm sure that Casey remembers this and John Hurd remembers it, where you could use your internal links to shoot PageRank at specific pages that you wanted to rank and to keep it from pages that, like your privacy page that you didn't really didn't expect or want to rank. This is from 2009 from Matt Cutts. "The ways that you choose to create your site architecture, and how you link between your pages is a type of page rank sculpting." And in reality, that's the kind of page rank sculpting we have available to us now, is creating it through our site structure. And a lot of that has to do with internal links. So if you use Moz crawl tools, Moz will give you its proxy for PageRank. It calls it Page Authority. Now this is just a proxy and it's just kind of a relationship thing. It's not it doesn't have any meaning in and of itself. So if you look at these two sites that I looked at on Moz, you can see in the left-hand column, it tells you how many internal links are going to a page, and then what the authority of that page is. And you can see in the one on the right that the home page has a low but okay page authority, but Google and most web crawlers can't see the internal links going to their other pages. And those all have a page rank or a page authority of one, a very low authority that they're probably not ever going to rank for anything. The one on the left shows something similar. The number of internal links definitely influences the page authority of a site. So this is important information that I always look at. Then if you go to Screaming Frog, you can get some other information that you can correlate with this. You can see the level of a page on the site, with the homepage being level zero, and the number of internal links going to that page. So if you take a look at these, you can see some interesting things. And you know, probably one of the most interesting is the one on the left. If you go down to about line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you'll see a second level page with one link going to it. So something's wrong here. Either that page is not useful, and there's no reason to link to it, so you might as well remove it, or it is useful, but it doesn't have enough links going to it, and there aren't enough places on the website where you're directing searchers to go to that important information. So if you're an Excel geek, you can take information from both Moz, this information, and the information from Screaming Frog, and use like a VLOOKUP and replacement to correlate this all together to see the level of the page, the number of links going to it, and the number and the page authority, the Moz page authority of the site. And once you see that, you'll get a pretty clear picture of why certain pages on a site might be ranking and others might not be doing anything for the business. So you really want to match up the top level pages with the fathead terms where there's really high competition. These need to be high authority pages, which they're going to get from getting external links and internal links. And you really want to try to get external links as well as internal links to most of these top level pages in order to really boost their authority. For the middle, chunky middle layer of terms, they don't need quite as much authority on the pages, and you're going to have mostly internal links, but some of those pages should have external links. And then your internal linking is going to help push that around on the website. And then for low competition terms, they should be matched up with pages that are kind of a deep level on the website, these long tail terms. And most of those can get away with just having internal links to it. But this is really as simple as it is to build a website that is structured in a way that it's pushing the page authority where you need it to go, so that the pages that need it can rank for the terms that you'd like them to rank for. And then while you're at it, make sure that you improve any of this crummy internal link text you may have. We all know how impactful external link text is. There is absolutely no reason to think that there's no impact from internal link text. You just want to do it in a way that's not forced and that's not overdone, that you're not using the same term every single time to send searchers to the same page. So take a really good look at your internal link text, and most link tools will tell you what that text is. So you want to make your site beautiful and strong. There is no reason why it can't be powerful and strong and help you with its site structure, as well as being useful for searchers and having all of the usability features that they need. When you think, sometimes it's time to consolidate things. Somebody will come to you and they're trying to do business under several names or several brands. Some of them have 10 websites. Some of them have pages with very little content on them that should be combined together. Some of them they're trying to force listings where they don't really shouldn't really have extra listings. So, nobody that paid $10,000 for websites is ever going to come to you and say, "Oh, should we get rid of this website?" Because it's valuable to them. And a lot of this stuff happened because of vulnerabilities in the Google algorithm over the years, made it useful for us to do some weird things. But you have to be the one who tells them, "Okay, now's the time to do this." You really want to be their trusted guide. If they say, "I want to keep all five of these websites," and you as an SEO know that they could do a better job and that you could do a better job for them if they were to consolidate and redirect and put all their eggs into one website that they could really concentrate on making into a dynamite site, you have to be the one that tells them that. And you're probably going to have to convince them, and you're probably going to have to show them examples, and you're probably going to have to take things a little bit at a time. But one of the things that you can really do to help your clients out is to be the trusted guide with these things and to help them understand the lay of the land in 2017 and what's going to benefit them the most. Expert content is something that we all need to be having on our websites these days. Anything less than expert content is probably going to just start falling out of the index. Either entire websites or specific URLs. Sometimes you get a superstar like Miles Mason, this lawyer in Memphis, this divorce lawyer, who is like a content machine. And when you have somebody like that, you can help to guide them to really create a lot of expert content that's going to help them rank for all kinds of things. But the reality is, most of us don't have clients like that. We have clients that are subject experts, and on our team, we've got media experts. And we really need to put those two together to find a way that works for our company and our clients, where we can put together the subject experts and the media experts in order to get good expert content on websites. This is another thing that you're probably going to have to prove it to your client as you go along. You're probably going to have to start with a one project and make sure that it works well for them, and then they'll be convinced that you can take on more of these subject plus media expert projects to try to create really expert content that's going to get a lot of attention. Also, piggyback on trends. This Google Trends tool, if you haven't ever played with it, it's very amazing, and it has evolved over time to become better and better. But one of the things you can look at is does gun shop get more searches in your area, or gun control? So these are the kind of things that you can use it for. You can also use it to find out, what people are searching for the most. So if you're getting a blank on topics for content, go to Google Trends, play around with your keywords, your location, and see what you can come up with. Another good thing to kind of inspire you is thinkwithgoogle.com. They have a lot of information in there. This particular example shows things that are applicable for travel businesses, but they do have these for other types of businesses as well, and they can give you some really good ideas as to the type of content that you might want to create. So for content, you want to facilitate it, and you want to collaborate with your experts, your topic experts, who are your clients, and make sure that you're getting their expertise on their website in a way that makes sense for searchers, that's attractive to searchers, and engages them. In local search, it's really important to choose the right categories. That's the main clue to Google as to whether you are a relevant answer for particular queries or not. And in this particular query was radon mitigation. But when I look at the categories of the top rankers of this for this term in Denver, I see that they are in all different kinds of categories. So there's not a clear-cut category that I can use for a business that does radon mitigation. Well, look at this guy. He does radon mitigation. He does a lot of other things, all things basement-y. But very few of these things also have a category specifically for them. So in that case, a Google category specifically for them. So in that case, I would pick the closest thing you can find in Google for your category or categories, and then go to the Moz local category tool and try to find supporting categories on other websites. So this is a free tool that Moz gives us all, and it's based on categories at Google as well as categories at a lot of the data providers. So when I did this for all things basement-y, I found out that Yelp has a category called Home Services Waterproofing. Infogroup has Basement Waterproofing. Concrete Lifting at Axiom. Mud Jacking at Dex Knows. So I have all these opportunities on other people's pages to optimize other people's pages for my categories to help convince Google that these are the things that my business does. So get your categories right, and if it's unclear which categories are right, then make sure you're using supported categories at other important places. So in on-page optimization, you really want to control what you can, not only on your own website, but on other people's websites. And when you do that, you're much more likely to hit your target. So now we have time for some questions.
All right, great job, Mary. Lots of information there. So what we'll do here, folks, is we'll go ahead and leave this open for a couple minutes. I will go ahead and get the ball rolling, talk to Mary about some questions that I have. Let me go ahead and start, Mary, by asking a little bit more about the expert, you know, Google's move to expert content. You know, the EAT, the expertise, the authoritativeness, the trustworthiness has been a long-known factor that Google really pushes in their quality rater guidelines. And I keep having people ask me how they can get into that, you know, submitting that direct expert content. What are the odds, really, that most everyone on the call are going to be able to have that direct submit to Google option in the next year, for example?
I'm not sure what you mean. Which direct submit to Google?
The ability that Google's been giving the ability for specific brands to submit direct posts directly into Google.
Oh, okay.
We've kind of covered that at Search Engineers. So has that something that you've come across, or is that, have you seen that happen with any small businesses specifically?
I think with small businesses, you're probably going to have to piggyback mm-hmm. on some other service, just because Google doesn't have a way to try to deal with every small business's coding and system and stuff. So I would look for the businesses that already have partnered up with Google, that Google is showing actions that they're providing to them. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're a really big brand, it's worth talking directly to Google to see if you can meet their requirements so that you do not have to go through a third-party vendor. Have you seen any examples of that?
No. John said that he had a couple, and I haven't seen it. I've been talking to Alan Blywise a little bit about it. He's got bigger clients, and so they've had the opportunity to submit content directly in, which is really interesting because Google seems to be giving that preference.
Yes.
Can't argue with that. If you can inject content straight in to the index, you got to be loving that. But yeah, I'm not sure that they've opened the floodgate on that yet. So I'm sure as we get more information, we'll be able to tell everyone about that here at Search Engine News.
Yeah, I think that they wanted to let everybody do it and then realized what a nightmare it was. So now they're having to kind of back off of it and refine it a little bit.
Yeah, and just a quick note, I know that Dan initially submitted a question. Dan, I think we accidentally deleted that question, the one about defining local SEO. So if you want to go ahead and retype that in, that would be great. So first thing we have is we have a question here from Janet, and she's talking about how do you get your logo to show up. Is she talking probably about the knowledge panel?
So in your knowledge panel, you can actually you have an option for uploading a logo. A lot of people want to upload their logo as their primary image on your local knowledge panel, but that's not what Google wants to show there. So just upload it in in the place where they want you to upload it. Also, you can use schema. When you're doing nested schema on your website, you can include a URL that points Google to a page that has your logo on it. I hope that answered your question. If not, please try again, and I'll try again.
Yeah, not a problem. And I have a, I'll go ahead and paste over an information page on how you can optimize your knowledge panel. And you can do that directly several different ways. So I'll go ahead and send that over. It's under enhancing your site attributes. And let me just paste that over. And for all of you on the call, great way to establish and secure your brand identity there specifically. So check that out. Let's go ahead and move to the next question. Jeff King asks, Mary, could you elaborate a little more on how categories and those external services affect Google's categories? Are you saying that it will help Google to create a more relevant category? And he used the example basement services site.
No, I don't think it's going to help Google create more relevant categories. We had fixed categories with Google for quite a while. Then Google let us create custom categories for a while, and then it backed off on them and really reduced the number of categories it has. So Google just has knowledge of what things go in what categories. For example, over the years, it's figured out these are all the things a plumber does. These are all the queries that indicate that somebody's probably looking for a plumber, so let's show them some plumber results, even if we show them some other results also. What you're doing with using other trusted websites to give Google more clues as to what your business does. So if you're in radon mitigation and your category was cleaning services, that might not be something that Google really puts together with radon mitigation. So you want to make sure that InfoGroup or Axiom or Yellow Pages or Yelp, somebody that Google looks to, gets a lot of information from, and trusts the information, what they're saying about you. So think of it kind of like link text. If Yelp says you do radon mitigation, and the Yellow Pages says you do radon mitigation, and InfoGroup says you do radon mitigation, then Google's probably going to think, oh, okay, this business is relevant for radon mitigation.
Right, very good point. Okay, continuing on here, Dan has a good question here. He says, Mary, you mentioned consolidation. How should we think at a high level about page consolidation on a site?
Well, page consolidation on a site, the first thing I do is run a crawl, and I would also look in Webmaster Tools. It's like which pages are getting some attention from searchers already, and which pages are getting no attention whatsoever. And you actually have to look at pages. Now, that's going to be, really hard job if you've got 10,000 pages on your site. But for most small businesses, if you've got a couple hundred pages on the site, you sit down and you click through and you look through them and you say, this is not expert content. This is not going to serve the searcher well that made a query about this particular topic. And, I don't know about the high level part. The high level part to me is, what are people already interested in? What pages are they spending time reading? Are there pages that are not getting any attention that people are bouncing away from that have some information that could be combined onto another page? So I would be thinking more about combining pages or eliminating useless pages than I would about anything else. And the reason why there's a lot of these low quality, low text volume pages on websites is it used to work. We used to be able to pick an exact match search term, create a page around it, and it would rank. That doesn't work anymore. So let's take all those pages that are about a specific thing and put that information together in a way that's logical, that's helpful for searchers.
Yeah, very good point. And just to expand on that a little bit, it used to be, as Mary said, Google used to treat our sites as books. We would continue to add on pages, and those pages would eventually rank, hopefully, for some long-tail keyword phrases. And, you know, that was the accepted strategy. You would add to your site with new content. And then, of course, Panda came on the scene. And Panda came to the point where if you had a lot of low-quality, thin, or useless content, it hurt you. It hurt the entire site, kind of like an anchor dragging down the entire domain. So now it's to the point where you really want to service your site like highly, you know, like an extremely expensive car that my son is never going to be able to afford, even though he has posters all over his wall. You want to make sure that you go in and you prune content. A great way to do that is with a site called Siteliner, siteliner.com. And I use it all the time. And Mary mentioned previously about, you know, if you're talking about consolidating content, well, imagine that you're a cupcake blog. This is a good example because it happened to me a couple weeks ago. And the blogger could not figure out why a lot of her cupcake recipes were not ranking. And then you do an analysis and find out that she has a ton of shared content. If she's got 27 cupcake recipes and 15 of them have 40% of the same content, including the exact same directions and preparation steps, Google's probably not going to consider that a high quality result. So we ended up having to prune several of those steps or several of those pieces of content off of her site immediately. And next thing you know, the ones that we left started to jump forward in the search results. So start thinking about that with your local pages as well. Doing a content on it like that is very important. Siteliner is a very simplistic tool that compares content between pages on a site so that you can visually see percentages. Okay, so moving on here, Dan has another question, Mary. He says, how should you think about local? I think this is a question that got deleted, actually. He says, I have customers in cities where 1 to 10 miles might be local, whereas in rural areas, 40 miles might be local.
So you need to use something that will allow you to emulate being in that location, whether it's a proxy server or something like the Bright Local location emulator tool, and see what Google thinks is local in that particular area. It's going to differ. I know exactly what you're talking about. I live in an area where if you're going to buy a new car, you think nothing of driving 1.5 to 3 hours to shop for one.
Right.
But if I lived in a city where there were 20 car dealers within a half a mile of each other, you know, that's a different situation. So you need to see what kind of results Google is providing for the queries that are important to you or your client, and learn from those. If Google's only showing things within a 1 mile radius and your client is 10 miles away, then you need to kind of rethink your strategy.
Very, very good point. Okay, Justin has a good question. He says, other than finding and using the correct categories, what do you feel is the next most important element for high success in on-page optimization?
I would have to go with what I call the free ads, which is the page titles and the meta descriptions that you give to your pages. And the reason for that is, you know, page titles are just important to the search engines, and that combination of the page title and the meta description quite frequently is what searchers see when they see you in the search results, and that really makes a difference whether they click on your free ad and go to your website or to some go to someone else's website. What's your opinion on that, Casey?
Oh, I agree. Definitely. The all-important first click. I mean, my goal, I always want to try to write a quality meta description because I'm trying to sell the click. And more these days, Google is rewriting these meta descriptions in mass. So if you don't have a good one or if you've forgotten to fill one out, Google will ignore it and put something else in there that's not, you know, very qualified. You know, for a fact, if you, most people have, you know, if you're using a blog and you do not, for example, specify a custom meta description on your blog homepage, Google will just pull up the first crawlable text on the page and usually it's gibberish or nonsense. Clearly, that's not going to help your conversion. So definitely very, very important. I couldn't agree more. Okay, so continuing on here, looks like Mary Jo has a question. Mary Jo asks, Mary, now that Google has a new sorting feature for hotels, how do you optimize your hotel to appear in these local searches?
And I assume by the sorting feature, you're talking about like best, lowest rates or highest rated or closest to something. So some of these things you can't really influence. But some of them you can influence. And, you know, one of the biggest ones is your reviews. What do your reviews look like? Because very few people want to go lay down in a bed in a hotel that has a one-star rating. You know, everybody would like to get value for their for what they're buying. And it's just, you know, reviews, especially with hotels, I think are absolutely enormous. Things like rates, if they're sorting on that, I mean, it is what it is. So the best thing you can do is try to provide the correct information to Google so that Google can understand it. And when somebody's looking for a $100 a night hotel room and you that's what you offer, that Google shows you for that. Instead of, you know, I mean, I've seen hotels like chain hotels in Chicago, you know, like a Best Western or something that come to you and want you to optimize them for luxury hotel downtown Chicago. I mean, it's just not, it just doesn't make sense sometimes what people expect you to do. Your best customers are going to be the customers that you can give them exactly what they're looking for. That's what makes everybody happy. That makes you happy. That makes them happy. So be very honest and open and thorough with what you do offer and do a good job with it. Casey, you have anything to add to that one?
No. I think you covered that extremely well. Again, as someone who's been in a lot of hotels this year for traveling, I can tell you that I rely on... When I'm looking at a hotel to register, I'm usually going to stay because I'm a Marriott Rewards member. So I'm basically always going to stay at Marriott. But I'm going to look at the Marriott specifically to see, first of all, what the price is. And then after that, I'm going to look at amenities and I'm going to look at location. So when we talk about optimizing in the hotel space, bottom line is always going to be price. I mean, that's why the Circus continues to do so well in Vegas, even though they have an extremely antiquated property. They do extremely well on price. If you want to go to Vegas for the whole weekend, you can probably do that for less than $200. And you could do that by staying at the Circus, which is not a high quality hotel, but it's Vegas. So it's just something to think about with regards to price. Very good point. All right. So continuing on here, let's talk. Kate has a good question here. You can cut the low hanging fruit on pages with Screaming Frog. Is there anything with a very low word count that is likely to be considered low value?
I think that's more of a statement that Kate's making, and I would definitely agree with that. Screaming Frog will give you the word count on a page. You can go look at those pages, and as she says, you know, many times you're going to find that it's not a very good page, or it might be a good page as far as graphics or images, but doesn't have enough text on there to really make it valuable in the search engine's eyes. So that is definitely
right. That's a very good point. And just as an addendum to that, just so that you guys know, you can have a low word count page that does extremely well. For example, if you go to Google and type in, is it Christmas? you are going to get a featured result of a site that when you click on it, it's one word that says no, it's not Christmas. So start thinking, not necessarily thinking about the word counts themselves, think about user intent, user query. Because if I'm looking, for example, again, is it Christmas, and I go to a site and it says no, that's perfectly fulfilling the user intent. So I try not to get hung up on word count too much myself when I do auditing. My goal is to determine whether or not the page reaches and answers the specific intent it's trying to convey. So definitely consider that as well. Okay, Janet, would you 301 redirect pages you delete to point to related pages? Oh, I've got a good opinion on this, but go ahead, Mary.
Yes, I would. Your opinion?
So Google just came out actually about this and said that if you are going to redirect to a related page, it needs to really be related. And they gave some examples in the Hangout. And one of the examples was John Mueller says that if you have a blue widget page and you're redirecting to a red widget page, that's not related. So that's very telling because, again, if you've got various categories of items, you want to make sure that you're redirecting to something that is not going to upset the intent of the user. Another example would be a food blog who, let's say they had a page going to a banana cream pie recipe, but they redirected the user to a coconut cream pie recipe. Those are not related, even though you would think that because they're cream pies, according to Google, that would be a poor user experience. Now, what Google has said that is if you had a page that, let's say you had a Roundup and you took off a banana cream pie recipe on your site, but you know that you have a Roundup post also on your site, which contains a banana cream pie recipe, that to Google would be an appropriate use of user intent, and you could redirect accordingly. Now, what happens if you decide to en masse take a lot of pages and redirect them to other pages that aren't necessarily related? Well, Google has said that they're going to treat all those as soft 404s, which means that they're not going to count the redirect, they're not going to move any authority over, and you're not going to get really any benefit from that. It's the same way as if you were to do a mass redirect to your homepage. A lot of people start doing that. I was talking to an e-tailer the other day, and they had 1,000 pages they were removing, and they didn't have anything related, so they're just going to redirect to the homepage. And basically, you just have to show them the statement from Google saying, yeah, don't do that. There's nothing user-friendly about that. We're just going to drop all those pages out of the search. So to answer your question, if you're going to direct related pages, make sure they're related pages, and you're going to have to make a determination as to what is related based upon user intent. If I, as a user, am looking for a page on your site having to do with camping resources, and you redirect me to another page that has to do with maybe general hiking resources or something that's outdoor related but not necessarily closely related, that's something that you might want to consider. So definitely something to be aware of. Okay, Mary, it looks like we're getting to the end of them here. Let's get a couple more here. Shane Wright has a question. Is there a preferred way to create content for the answer boxes? A single FAQ page with multiple questions and answers, separate pages each featuring one question and answer, or something different? Would having that content in place on a blog located in a subdirectory /blog be effective? We can both talk about that, Mary. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna defer to you on that one because I know that you gave a lot of detailed facts about that in your class.
Okay, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, Shane. We do have a presentation. I'm not sure if you did see it. If not, I can send you a link. I did do a featured presentation, a featured snippets presentation at a conference earlier this month. You might get a lot of benefit out of that. Usually a single FAQ page with multiple questions and answers is fine, but it's harder for Google to pull out specific information as opposed to having a unique page or post that answers fully that question and answer. So what I'd first ask you to do is, if you're specifically trying to optimize for something, do a search in Google and see what's being returned. Is the featured answer being returned from a page that contains a lot of other FAQs? Or is it being returned from a page that is very, you know, that specifically finite niches and goes into detail on that one topic, on that one question? Just like if you were searching a featured answer and a list was returned, I'm going to optimize for a list. If I was searching a featured answer that I wanted to get and a table was returned, I'm going to try to do a table because we want to replicate, we want to mimic, we want to copy what currently Google is returning as the number one position zero featured answer. So take a look at that information specifically and do that. And as with regards to whether it's located, be it a straight HTML page, be it a subdomain page, be it a blog page, it really doesn't matter. It's all about you having the best answer to the query that Google is looking for. It's really that simple. Okay, Barbara here, instead of redirects, could you just use an internal or external link? I think she's talking about the Mary again about, you know, moving content.
I'm not sure I quite understand about that, because if you have a page that isn't very good, doesn't have very much content on it, why keep that on your site?
Yeah, exactly. And she says instead of redirects, if you have a page that's not very good, if you have a page that doesn't answer the query or that you consider low quality, you've got two choices. You can either expand the page, or you can look for something else closely related and redirect that page. But usually, if the page is, if you can expand, we call those stubs. Pages that don't have a lot of quality, pages that are of low word count, those are stub pages, pages that you can expand. And that's the first approach we would take, is can I salvage this page? Can I make this page better? Can I add some structured data to this page? Are the images optimized? Does it load fast? Does it ask and answer questions for the user? And then decide after that where to go. Janet has a question here. She says, what about glossaries? They are short content. Would you put each word in the glossary on a separate page?
Like Casey says, first I would see what Google is presenting as results for terms, which I assume are going to be like, what is local search or something of that nature.
Right, right.
So first I would look to see, is Google returning an answer box? I'm not sure that I, you know, unless I had a lot to say about a topic, I don't think I would just put one question and one answer on a page. Just my opinion.
And I think that's a very good point. I think that's a very good point. If you, you know, do some research, type in glossary and your niche into Google and see what is being returned. Most likely you're going to find that most glossaries are a little bit more detailed, or they're refined as, you know, there might be 10, 20, or 30 of these terms on a page, so that there's specifically more content, with the goal being that maybe Google could come down and grab the snippet that's most related to that definition and pull it up. But when we talk about definitional content, Google is really clear that they want a couple things. Number one, they want that to be closer to the top of the page. They want that to have a accompanying graphic. You know, they want to make sure that you're using your correct markup, which is paragraphs, little P tags, especially for structured data. Featured snippets really are not controlled by structured data, but it's controlled by very specific semantic markup in regards to, you know, using P for paragraphs, using OL and LI for your lists, things like that. When you do tables, using the table tag, things like that. So Google does pull that stuff out and does seem to provide some, a little bit of a preference when it's surfacing featured answers. So definitely something to consider. So on that note, Mary, I think we've gotten through all the questions, and there was a lot of them today. You did a fantastic job. If you were to do a brief summary, give the audience just a couple takeaways from today, what would you tell them?
I would say, if you're not doing schema and doing a lot of schema on a lot of different things, now's the time to get into that. That answer, Google has pretty much shifted its thinking with the rise of mobile phones, and it wants to give us answers and short answers that'll fit on a small screen. And that we should be thinking about how we can satisfy that need that Google and searchers have as far as having really structured content that is unmistakable to Google. Two, I think that there's a lot of people that they come to you and they say, we did this, 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 and this, and why can't I rank? or you know, I want you to help me rank better, and that you really need to take make do a thorough examination of everything that's going on before you start throwing things out there. Because you know, there's so many different ranking factors, and there's so many different things that we know how to do as internet marketers and SEOs that you really need to figure out what's going to have the most impact. Where should I start? And set aside some of those other things that they may be cool, they may be fun, it could be something new, some new shiny thing that you want to try out. But the fact is, if there's crummy content on the site or there's bad titles and tags on the site, those probably need to be addressed before you start doing anything fancy. I think that's about it.
All right. Yeah, and again, as Mary said, very simple. Whether regardless of your niche, regardless of your problem, a competent, detailed site audit is always the right decision when starting a project. You always want to see what they're doing right, you always want to see what they're doing wrong, and you want to look and see what opportunities exist. And that's how I know I approach my clients. I know that's how Mary approaches her clients. That's what we want to do. We don't throw things out on a wall and let them stick, unless you write in a fast answer, and we do that all the time. But that's completely different because we don't
Yeah.
have time to do full site auditing there. But for those of you on the call, if you're looking at, make sure that you avail yourself of our local SEO checklists. Make sure that you avail yourself of this presentation, which will be available for download today. Review all the information. Go back and review the questions, review the answers. Lots of information. So on that note, I'm Mary from Colorado and Casey from Southern California. We wish you the very, very best. Thanks for your time today. We'll see you again sometime soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone.